Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 147, featuring Kevin Goyler. And I know I'm messing up his name, Lon.
Just call him Kevin the Dane.
Kevin the Dane. That's what everyone calls him. He is part one. This is another two-parter. And the other part is Pedro Fernandez from RQ9. This is, as I've mentioned before, what happened. This is, I recorded these over at THU. And I'm not necessarily going to release them all at once, but I am releasing them in pairs. They were not recorded the way that I normally record the podcast. They were part of THU TV, so that's why they sound a little bit different. They were sort of done in the open area, which is why you hear crowds around us every now and then. But they did a really good job recording it, so the audio is still very clear. But it was in a very active environment, and we talk a lot about both those guys, about why they came to THU and why they're there. What's interesting about them, Lon, is that they're both from the architecture community and very influential, right? So they both actually have some good media presence out there, right?
Yeah, I mean, both of the really popular YouTube channels and yep. strong showing there. And I think this was also the first time that there was this really, you know, widespread attendance from the ArcViz community mm-hmm. at THU. So it was great to see that those guys were there and to help spread the word. I think, what was there, maybe 100 folks?
From 100 or so folks came from the ArcViz community. But what's more important is that people like Kevin and Pedro, who do reach out to the community in a very unique way, were able to go there and say, "Oh, now that I've seen it, I can spread this to other people." So I really think that it's going to grow from this. I don't know. I was really, really cool. I loved meeting Kevin. This year I met him. Right? You met him at D2 too.
At D2 in Vienna. Yep.
Yeah, he's a really great guy. I think that the way that he is trying to create a popular YouTube channel to talk about specific issues or events that are going on, I think it's really great. I love his style.
It's really friendly, and you could tell that he wants to help. He's passionate about helping.
Yeah, and I think that's really cool that he's doing what he's doing, and I definitely want to get involved with him more because I think there's a lot of stuff that we can do with him and communicate through him and with him. And Pedro, I've known for a few years now. I know him through Jeff Muddle as well. But RQ9 is a very, very unique ArcViz company that's now in the UK, but he's actually originally Portuguese.
It was a bit of a homecoming for him at THU.
Yeah, it was great. You know, they were very excited when I talked to the guys at THU TV. It says, "Yeah, we're going to have Pedro Fernandes." He goes, "He's Portuguese." They were very excited about that. But he is very much sort of what's cool about him, and the bridge that they have at THU is that his style is much more based on matte painting.
Yeah, it's more of a matte painting style. It's
right.
Really gorgeous.
Really gorgeous. And the way that he composes things is much more the way a concept artist would do it, which is to try to tell a story through the picture, right? And his YouTube channel is much more based on teaching people those techniques. So they're very much in the education sphere and teaching their techniques and showing that kind of stuff. So really great stuff that's going on in that area. I think it's really cool that architecture is doing is sort of to looking at outside influences these days, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's good to kind of connect those dots, right?
Yeah, I think that's the important part of this whole thing. So really great guys that are out there. Lon, do you have any announcements? I think
we're going to be at Autodesk University coming up real soon.
There you go. That's what I was hoping you'd talk about.
You know how much I love Vegas.
You love Vegas.
we'll be at Autodesk University with you know, our booth there, and anybody that wants to come by and say hi and see what we're up to.
Yep.
You know, and all that stuff. It's going to be great. I'm sure that we'll have a pretty big team there. Mm-hmm. And then I think we're also going to be doing some private VR demos too. So if anybody's interested in seeing some of the latest and greatest,
yeah, like what kind of stuff do you think you'll be showing? If you can say,
We'll be doing some of the 6 degrees of freedom, pre-rendered 6 degrees of freedom, specifically the light field with Lytro and mm-hmm. and possibly some of the presence stuff with the No Zone guys.
Yep.
I'm going to take a little setup here of the Vive and kind of set it up in the back and,
okay.
Or possibly even in my room or lobby or, you know, just something that's low key. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to do a full setup there at the booth just because,
just too much going on.
Too much going on. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but so cool. We will have a booth there, and then I think we'll be some of our partners will be with us and stuff. So it'll be fun, right?
Yeah, be good.
So great. And when is that happening? Do you know?
Ooh, that's a good question. Not next week, but the week after.
Okay, so
for 13th, the week of the 13th.
13th of November or something like
Somewhere around 13th, 14th, 15th.
Okay, great. So if anyone's going there, I know a lot of people ask me if I was going. Unfortunately, I'm not going to be going to AU. But Lon will be there, so you guys
look me up.
Look him up. All right. Thanks a lot, guys. Hopefully you enjoyed this podcast.
Welcome to another CG Garage, where the Chaos Group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're going to fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passé. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fresnel.
And I'm starting today with my good friend Kevin, who we've never actually met in person until a couple of weeks ago, right?
Yeah, until D2 a couple of weeks ago.
Right, in Vienna.
Yeah.
Which is great. I always meet people in different places around the world. Kevin does some very interesting thing. I know him as Kevin DeDane, and he uses that name himself for your social media purposes, because I know that since you're Danish, your last name is a little hard to pronounce. But let's go ahead and tell people, what is your last name?
Yeah, well, my name is Kevin Göhler.
Göhler, okay.
But it's got like a special Danish character in it, So I can't really use it anywhere online because people can't pronounce it and they can't type
it in. They can't write the special character.
they can't do anything with it. So I was like, okay, I need a tag or somehow, right? And I was just like, because I'm a generalist and I am into all kinds of different stuff.
Uh-huh.
And when I started the YouTube channel, I wasn't really sure what it was going to be about.
Right. Well, let's talk a little bit about that, because you obviously have an interesting social media presence
doing,
and you're trying to do that. That's become very important for you, and we definitely want to promote that. But before people realize why you have that, let's explain what is your background. So where you obviously are involved in CG in some way, and you've been doing a lot of CG. So tell me a little bit about where that started.
It started many years ago.
Many years ago, yeah.
Because my dad, he trained as an animator.
Oh, he did? For
and
what?
And then he went to a school in Denmark.
Oh, classical animation?
Animation workshop in Viborg,
uh-huh.
When it was all new.
Right.
So he trained for that, and he did a little work, and then he moved to Germany for a period of time,
uh-huh.
And worked at a studio in Germany.
Okay.
But then he got back and started doing 3D stuff. So he bought a version of 3D Studio Max.
Oh, okay.
The second one, I think.
Right.
R2.
Uh-huh.
And then I had it on the computer. So in some
so
of the
you
oldest...
you were pretty young at the time, right? So.
Yeah, I was maybe like 13, maybe.
Uh-huh.
14, maybe. But when I... it was like 2001. I started doing stuff, but I didn't know anything, and there was like no tutorials, and my father, he had these large tutorial books.
There were books at the time, before YouTube's, right?
So he still got them.
Yeah, he still got them.
And with like miniature thumbnails, so you could never, I just didn't get it, so I was just fooling around with it, and making primitives and using modifiers, no poly modeling, no
right.
None of that.
Just learning how to do that stuff, and so that's how you started getting into it, right?
Yeah, that's how I got into it. But then I used it for some years, and then I went down other paths, and I had a lot of like different jobs. I was also in the military for a short while.
Okay.
And, after that, I started studying biology.
Okay.
And while I was studying biology, I was getting more and more like, everybody was asking me, so what are you going to do with it? And I was like, I don't know. I just find it interesting.
Right.
So I just wanted to learn it.
Uh-huh.
And then my friend, he asked me if I still did that 3D stuff.
Oh, right. Uh-huh.
And I was like, yeah, I could do that. Because he needed like an animated introduction for a small short film they were doing at his school.
Yep.
So I made that small animation,
right?
And then I was like, I should try to figure out if I can like study this
uh-huh.
in Denmark and really learn it.
Yeah.
And then I found a 3D college in Grenå, Denmark.
Uh-huh. And what did you do there?
You start. I started on a like a generalist course.
Yeah.
And then you split off into either high-end visual effects or game, depending on what skill set you want
right.
to acquire. So I chose the visual effects, and
right.
After the first year, you have a first year of like basic training.
Yep.
And after that, you have to go out and get an apprenticeship.
Right.
So you are an apprentice in 3 years at a company.
Yeah.
And then you are like maybe 10 weeks at the company,
yeah.
and then you're back to school for 5 weeks.
Okay.
10 years at a company and back to school, back and forth.
Yeah.
And that way, the company keeps paying you the salary even when you go to school.
Oh, nice.
And then the company is like...
They don't do that in the US. It sounds like a very Danish thing.
Yeah, it's a socialist thing.
very, very Scandinavian. You get paid for going to school.
We did.
Yeah. Well, that sounds amazing. And so you I also know you, obviously, because you're a D2, you're very much into the ArcViz community as well. So how did you stumble into ArcViz? You said it was kind of a bit of an accident that you got into
Yeah,
it, right?
That was kind of... My boss now, he saw my first year exam.
Yes.
From a friend of mine who puts it to him and was like, hey, check out this this exam. The exam is like, you do images, video, and a website.
Yeah.
And then you put it all together, and I
as a package,
and yeah. I put mine online with a contact form.
Yeah.
And luckily, I implemented the contact form because my boss
Email, right? Oh, right, because you hit the contact button, right? Yeah.
So he contacted me and asked me if I wanted an apprenticeship,
uh-huh.
and I said yes.
Okay, and it was for an ArcViz company,
It was an ArcViz company, yeah, and I'm still there.
You're still there. How long have you been there?
What is it? Maybe 3 years now.
3 years? Okay.
I just finished education this summer.
Right.
And then he hired me on as a... As a full-time employee.
Well, that's really, really interesting. And I like the fact that you've actually done or understand the visual effects side of things and you're doing ArcViz. You don't keep them separate. But there is a lot of common tools between these things, right? So that's another thing that a lot of people don't necessarily realize. But there's a sensibility about it.
Yeah.
So let's talk quickly about your social channel and what you're trying to do in your videos, and what motivated you to sort of put yourself out there as a voice and someone who does that.
I think I was like a couple of years ago, I was watching a lot of YouTube videos about how to create film movies, short films,
right.
Because I had like a fantasy about like
Mickey
I want to direct something.
Of course, we all do.
So so I started doing that, and then I thought. I wanted it to be a channel about movie making,
uh-huh.
but I just quickly realized that I'm not an expert in that.
Okay.
I don't know anything about that.
Sure.
So V-Ray 3.5 came out.
Oh yeah, that was not.
And I was like, okay, I'm gonna do a review. I'm gonna like put my face on the channel, because previous to that, the channel was only three short films I did.
Uh-huh.
So it wasn't like tutorials, and I didn't talk to the camera and all that stuff. So I did it with the V-Ray 3.5.
Right.
And I did a small, quick review.
That's what I like so much about your videos, is that they are quick, right? And you do that, I want to say it, but the very YouTube style where you fast edit and you put all that stuff together.
Yeah.
Because you can absorb that video very quickly, and you give a lot of information in a very short period of time. And I think they're great. I always like your videos. I always post them on Facebook and stuff,
yeah.
because I think
thank you.
they're really good, and I think it's important that you decide to serve the community in some way and to tell people some information. You did the one for 3.6 as well, I think,
yeah.
right?
And that was one of the more popular ones, yeah.
Yeah, and you also did, remember when we were D2, there was a big controversy about us, Chaos Group acquiring Render Legion and, competition, et cetera.
Yeah.
But you really were, this is important. This is like you took it on. You're starting to take more of a journalistic approach to things, right? And I think that's really an important task that you're using the technology to review technology and talk about the industry and do things, because that's where people are getting their information now. They're getting it from social networks, et cetera. What are your aspirations? What do you want to do more? Do you think you want to keep going, or are you just sort of seeing how it's going?
I want to do everything.
Really?
That's my problem.
Yeah, we all do. But
I want to go forward with the channel, and I've been following some guys online, especially a guy called Tim Smore.
Uh-huh.
He's like teaching people how to make YouTube videos.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
And I actually like started his channel for half a year before I did anything.
Right.
Because I wanted to do it right from the start.
Uh-huh.
He always says that you should build up a business around your channel, because you have an audience who trust you and who are interested in the same things that you're interested in. So if you build up your own products that you can sell to your community, you'll make a lot more money than from ad revenue.
Interesting. So give me some examples of what you're planning to do there.
There's no plans yet.
Okay.
But you at least ideas are that maybe I'm a technical guy, so I do like scriptings and plugins at work.
Oh, okay.
So I could maybe sell packages of scripts or stuff like that.
Of course. I mean, the whole point of creating a market is to have an audience, right? And
yeah.
A good way to get an audience is to create content, and a good way to make content is to make really good content. That's, I think, is a brilliant idea to do that, and to leverage the fact that you're creating these very high quality, really interesting videos, that you keep getting an audience that wants to see them, and therefore it's a good avenue for you to sell and make a revenue on it.
Yeah.
Which brings up the point of THU, which I think is very interesting, is the struggle that people are having, because they may be very good artists or whatever, but they can't necessarily capitalize on it in some way.
Yeah.
So I think the fact that you are actually going out there and creating an audience, looking for an audience, that is something that has value, right?
Yeah.
Is there other... I actually wanted to talk a little bit about the Arcvis thing, because it is an important part of what's going on at THU this year. There wasn't really an ArcVis audience here before. This year, suddenly, some stuff that Jeff Muddle and I said last year about it tried to draw an ArcVis thing. And Jeff has a huge influence,
yeah.
as you know, in the ArcVis community. Drew a lot of people in, including some of you guys, to come and check it out. What do you think about THU and how the content that's here can help some of that community, because you kind of live in both worlds, so maybe it'd be a good perspective for you to talk about that.
Yeah, so I mean, Jeff, he was one of the reasons that I came here, and you were actually the other reason.
Okay, nice.
because on your podcast with after the one with Andre.
Oh right.
I went to get a ticket, and it was sold out. So
it was already sold out.
I was on the waiting
wow.
list, and.
Yeah.
And luckily, I got one. So, sorry, what was the question?
The question is, what do you think about the content that's here, and how do you think it could help the architecture community, the ArcVis community? Because it's not necessarily, most of the talks are not necessarily directly about ArcVis.
No,
do you think they can? What do you think they can help in that process?
Yeah. Well, in the ArcVis community, at least in my experience and in Denmark, where I'm from. We have a lot of technical guys who know how to use the software and make the images.
Right.
But maybe they didn't. They don't have the. They need creativity and inspiration, and they can really get that from a place like this, because this is not about technology.
Right.
Not that much, at least here at the THU. It's about the creative process and the creative process and the way that that everybody can like
yeah.
come together and create something meaningful and not just something.
But do you think that right now the ArcVis community sort of lacks that ability, in a sense of there isn't much voice in terms of the creative process? There isn't much creative inspiration in architecture besides just showing a still, and saying, great architecture for his rendering, there isn't something that's actually inspiring people and to do things.
I mean, a lot of people can make beautiful images and can make photorealistic images, but you need the story to, and that is the key element of the image.
Yeah.
And I think I see a lot of that missing, and also missed potential and opportunity to put a story or a narrative in your work,
right?
To move the audience more than just like make pretty pictures and sell apartments.
Right.
There has to be something deeper, well, more meaningful.
Yeah. I mean, I think that honestly, you're right. That's its exactly thing. And there are these moments in the ArcViz community that really sort of changed everything, right? So I always sort of use the what's an Alex Roman piece that he did, right? That was like a watershed moment where all of a sudden I was like, oh, because of exactly what you said, right? There was a story, there was inspiration, even though there was a feeling, and that story is not told to you directly, it's told to you indirectly. It's like an emotional story in some way.
Exactly.
And ArcViz does have that ability. So an example like that shows you that exists out there, but it's very hard to convey that information. And I really think that a thing like THU could help that community and get it inspired to do something more creative in some ways.
Yeah.
At the same time, I feel that the architecture community has something to offer the crowd at THU. Because one of the things that I feel is that THU tends, a lot of the people that come here who are especially in the concept world, if you look at a lot of their concept drawings, they're character driven.
Yeah.
Right? They're doing characters, characters, characters. While environments are so important, and the architecture community can help serve that environment. And you've worked in ArcViz, so you know what an architecture space needs to look. You know what a door size is. You know what this. So those are things that we become familiar with. And we can serve that community as well as just general design.
And that's also going to be a lot more important as we see more and more like virtual reality stuff.
Yes.
The environments in virtual reality experiences or games, they need to be created by people who know how to create a believable, realistic environment.
Right.
And not just a beautiful environment.
Yes.
Because an architect will know how to make a space that you want to be in.
Yes.
And not just you can make a space that is pretty, but it feels wrong or it feels off.
Yeah.
If the dimensions are off or...
Absolutely. I think, and I'm so glad you brought that up because this is something that I think is very important. I think that the world of VR is exploding right now in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are sort of going into the entertainment industry and trying to create content there. And they should draw on the architects to look into that, right? I would have loved to have seen a VR experience designed entirely by Zaha Hadid, you know?
Yeah, that would be great. It'd be amazing
because that's what, and the other thing that's nice about the architects or even the ArcViz companies, right? You guys could do this too, is VR is a new real estate space.
Yeah.
You can design an entire building or experience or city inside of VR as an actual space.
Yeah,
And
as something that is not ever supposed to be, or not even can be built.
Not ever can be built.
Because like when you have to make an architectural building, you have certain constraints. You have the gravity.
Gravity or laws like, you know, handrails.
and you don't Newton. Necessarily,
I need a handrail. But you don't necessarily need the handrails, right? So I think those are really good. Are you guys experimenting with VR stuff in your office?
Yeah, we have been ever since the Gear VR came out.
Right.
We have been done still renderings with V-Ray and Corona.
Oh, right.
For our customers.
Because so you were actually, here's another important point. You were actually creating VR content and selling it. Is that correct?
Yeah.
That's, I think, what's also important for people to do. It's not just experimentation in VR. You guys are actually producing VR and selling it and making money off of VR, right? And it's not just through, you know, donations or whatever. This is people that require it and want to use it for their experiences, right?
Because our customers, they sell real estate. That's their goal, right?
Yep.
So when they get the glasses and they can put the glasses, the VR glasses on the customers. The customer gets a, just seeing the space in real life,
right?
With the scale, that is something you cannot do that with an image or an animation. So
right.
So you really have to. It really gives something else, and our customers see the value of that. We make a lot of VR images. For maybe half of our projects, we include VR images.
That's amazing to hear, and I think that's really valuable. I think people should know, because not everyone in this audience will know, that your customers are not necessarily architects, right? Your customers could be real estate companies.
Yeah, typically.
Or developers in some ways, right? So those guys are using it specifically to sell their real estate and their customers. So they actually do have deep pockets, and they need these images to sell their product, right?
Yeah.
And I think the VR experience is great, because I would love to see what my building looks like, or my office, or my apartment before
the view. Especially the view is very important.
The view is very important. It's like, I'm buying an apartment that's on the 15th floor. What's my view going to be like?
Right? Yeah.
And so that's something you guys work on as well, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So we do a drone shoot, or a guy with a big like 30 meter stick with a camera, and he just points the camera in every direction, and we do a
right. So you get all the different floors to do that.
So we can do the different views from the different apartments.
Right. And when you guys deliver your VR content, what are you guys doing? Are you just doing like stereo cube maps? Or are you doing you said you were using V-Ray and Corona, so I'm assuming you're doing stereo cube maps, right?
Cube maps or spherical maps.
Okay.
We actually, in the beginning, we did spherical maps, and then we did the cube maps for the final images.
Okay.
But the reason we did the stereo images was because you can actually see where you are when you're looking at it on the screen. So when you have rendered it out, you can orient yourself on the sphere.
Right.
Which on the cube map is everything is flipped and moved.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard as an artist to actually do that way. Yes,
yeah.
I agree.
Because we use it for corrections as well.
Okay.
To put the VR images in the glasses, and then look around, and one guy is just outside. There's something wrong here, and I can see it on my screen.
Right.
Just like put a circle around everything, and with one image, you have the entire room covered.
Right.
Whereas with renders, I would need 10 renders
to check everything out. Yeah. No, they're really great. I've been a big fan of them, and it's actually very simple, right?
Yeah.
Most people, it's a camera selection in your render package, and you just render it out. What do you think are the differences that you see between actual stills and VR content in terms of how you organize it? You have to place the camera in a very different position, right?
Yeah. With the VR images, there's not really a lot of composition going on. Getting the height right is important.
Right.
And especially that's hard on rendered content, because my boss, he's a tall guy.
Yes.
When I think it looks right, he thinks the camera's too low.
Too low. Yeah, I know. I have that problem too. I'm a tall person. But it does help a lot for people to get scale, right? The minute you put it on, you're like, that's how far that looks, you know. At least you get that right. Scale is so important, and I think it's so important to architects to see that a still can't give you as much scale, right? You can cheat scale by just using a wider lens, which real estate agents use all the time to make a room look bigger than it actually is, right?
We use a lot of wide angles as well.
Of course, it's a style, right?
Yeah.
But it's cool. So okay, so tell me a little bit about your friends that are here, and then you know what? Because we're short on time. I want to go back to telling people where they can follow your stuff.
Yeah, they can. I mean, sure, YouTube.
Yeah.
Kevin the Dane.
Kevin the Dane on YouTube. That's your YouTube channel.
That's where most of the stuff is. But there's also an Instagram with a little bit of some behind the scenes and some projects and some of the thumbnails from the YouTube channel. And then on Facebook, there's also a Kevin the Dane Facebook page.
Okay, perfect. All right, thank you so much.
Hi, guys. That was part one of the podcast with Kevin the Dane. And now get ready for part two with Pedro Fernandez.
Thank you so much for being here, buddy.
It's a pleasure, Chris, to be here. It really is, especially amongst all these amazing artists that we follow, and kind of representing this very small niche of architectural visualization in such an event.
Well, I think it's important. I think it's so great that, you know, this was an idea that Jeff Muddle and I were talking about. It's like, we need to find a way to convince more of the architect and art-based people to come here, because I think there is a lot of influence that we can have from them and to them. yeah. in a lot of ways. And I think it's important. And right now, it's great to see so many ArcViz people at this event to sort of look at that. And so a couple of things that we should know. You are Portuguese, right?
Yeah. So I'm originally born in Portugal, right. and I studied here in uni, just in Lisbon. So
yeah.
at the moment, of course, I'm in just south of London in Surrey. But yeah, it's such an honor to see something like an event like this, of this magnitude, and so well organized with like the most impressive artists from all over the world here. And it's such an honor to see like that this is organized by someone from here. And I think André is not even from Lisbon, he's from Stoelvel.
Right.
And to see this, what you guys have created here. And yeah, it's such an honor being Portuguese and seeing everyone, all the production crew. I'm amazed. Really amazed.
I'm so glad you're able to do it. And hopefully you can be one of the people who is influential in the architecture and ArcViz world to spread the word about how awesome this event is. Because I think we would love to be able to find a way that we can have that more of that cross-communication between different creative groups.
Yeah.
But I've actually been a big fan of your work. I've seen your work a lot.
Thank you.
And I think that this, when they asked me to say to get a guest for today, I said Pedro would be fantastic, and I'm so glad that you were able to make it, because there is something very interesting about your work that's actually way more parallel to some of the work that's done in the film industry. So why don't you tell a little bit about your workflow and how it differentiates a little bit from the way that other people think of architecture visualization?
Yeah, so it's funny you mentioned that, because I was talking outside with this character artist yesterday, and when I told him I do ArcViz, he thought immediately, okay, he does marketing of like hotel suites and this type of thing. And then I showed him the portfolio, and he said, "Wow, this is actually quite close to concept art." And I said, "Yeah, I mean,
it is, right? I mean, you are making a concept art in a lot of ways."
Yeah, exactly. And what we do, especially, is we really get the initial embryo phase of the project. So it's really a concept of the project that we help develop with the architects, and it's all still very conceptual. And I mean, from the get-go, when I got into this and really started to see just how closely it links up with matte painting, with concept art, and I started following these guys, mostly due as well to some of the companies I'd been at in London, I really thought, wow, you know, this is great, because I get to do architecture and I get to do the graphic and concept design, which I love.
Right.
And we kind of merge the two with what we do at Archi9, so it's very much about getting those early concepts, but applying techniques and the type of expression that you have in concept art. So, it's definitely quite interesting how those two worlds are very similar. And a lot of the guys here that I've seen their talks, the guys that I've known, I don't know, since I've started, you know, my career in this, and seeing them here is like, it's amazing for me. Like I was just mentioning, I met Sparth and other greats that we have all their books and we follow, we get their concepts sent to us. And that in itself is just amazing, and it kind of also inspires us. And yeah, it's really enjoyable. You mentioned as well about kind of getting the word out. And we've got a video on YouTube that's gonna come out, and I've already put it in there, Trojan Horse, and I'm hoping to record from here something, because this, it's just blowing my mind.
I'm so glad.
It's incredible, like what's been done here. I can't say it enough. And it's like Jeff was saying, you're going to see, it's going to slowly creep up on you, and before you know it, you'll feel the tribe thing, and you really understand how that works. So yeah, it's incredible.
Really cool. Well, why don't you tell people a little bit about Archi9?
So basically Archi9 is a company that I started probably in Portugal, the name, when I was here. I was freelancing like 60K south from here. And I was in this really beautiful village close to the beach, and it all started from there. At the time, freelancing for like foreign countries, the normal stuff you do, starting to get into architecture and ArcViz as a solo freelancer. And then that kind of, when I moved to London to be with all these amazing artists, be with the best and try and be good at what I was doing and learn the most I could. After that period of freelancing, I decided then to really kind of build a company, Arcu9 Visualization, and it's mostly dedicated to architectural visualization, but again, it's in the early concepts of it, so I guess we've kind of got a niche of a niche, mm-hmm. where we do the concept work and we also do the normal marketing work that you see, but we've kind of tailored our niche and it's become that small niche that's grown and that we're known for. And a lot of what we do is also based very much on the concept world. So I do a lot of tutorials online to kind of show people, hey, this is another way of seeing things, another way of doing things.
Right.
And it highly connects with concept art, matte painting, and these types of things. Our client base is pretty much all over the world, which is also great because you contact with a lot of talented architects. I mean, architects are our main clients. So I'm an architect myself. You're an architect as well. So we all kind of speak the same languages and we know how crazy we are.
Right.
Or how crazy everyone in this field is. And it's really great to express what the client wants to see and design a little bit as well, you know, because the designs still come in an initial phase and we complete these. We that's one of our big segments, but we're also slowly moving now into VR, AR.
Interesting.
And understanding all this world. But our main thing is how do we translate our vision? And this was another thing that I'm kind of looking around here and seeing how these guys are doing it, because they're like a few years ahead of Arcu9, I think. And it's really looking at how they translate that in video games and how they keep the creative part and they bring it to VR and AR and these types of new technologies. So yeah, that is basically Arcu9 in a nutshell.
But don't you think that VR and AR, I actually feel the opposite. I think that the architecture people are ahead of the game in the VR AR world.
Yeah.
Because I think that there's something very interesting. So for example, let's go back to some of the renderings that you guys have done. What I find fascinating about it is you do it, you know, as far as how you actually execute it, you don't build it out to the extreme in a lot of ways. You do very simple, you focus specifically on form and light.
Yeah, yeah.
And you get form and light composed into those images, and then you add everything else as you go, just actually a lot like a traditional matte painting would go.
Yeah.
But what you also do, which is interesting because you don't have to do it.
Yeah.
You try to tell a story within that image.
Yeah.
And don't you think that, tell me what you think about the role of an architect in telling stories and how he tells that through images.
Well, this is another thing where I think it really connects to this concept art world. Firstly, the way we build it, right? So the way we build things is very similar as well to concept art. We've done images in a day, half a day, because it's very much about that expression, that initial, I'm always like mentioning to the team, it's about the thumbnail and the feeling that that gives you. And then the story is the relatability that you have. So the characters you put in your scene, the kind of making the architecture come to life. And it's this symbiosis between characters, light, color, and form that really make our images. I think that's one of the main forms. And you don't need much to tell a story. You just need light and shapes to kind of, you know, bring everything together. And there's some other amazing artists that, you know, with three or four strokes, like the Disney artist yesterday, it's like three or four strokes and he's defining everything.
Right.
And that's what we're trying to do in an initial take on things. And I think architects especially, they're an interesting bunch and it's an interesting way that they have a connection with images, because images are really like the vehicle that transmit the architect's vision. So I'm always mentioning, like, this is the architect's baby, right? We got to deliver it into the world in a really good form. And the first thing that, like, when we have a chat with any client is really to understand, even if they just send the model, they send the basics, and they say, here you go, guys. Take it and make this image from here and here and there. And I say, well, let's wait a minute.
Okay.
So I try and dialogue and speak with them and really understand, what's the story? What are you guys trying to transmit? What are the connections, visual connections you want? How do people relate to your building? And this all kind of comes into play as images, you know? So you're going to have a young and vibrant community in a health center or something like that. it can be, I mean, you can tell a multiplicity of stories around the visual and the way that you represent it through the mood. I mean, the mood is one of the most important, right? Like, we've all heard of blue skies and green trees. That's like the big one, and it's probably one of the hardest images. But even in that, you have to kind of somehow tell a story. You know, they want happy moods is something they say, like, they call it, oh, I want a happy mood.
Right.
And even in that, you have to find a creative way of telling a story instead of just placing, you know, some green trees, a really blue saturated sky and some sunlight. Even that, there is an importance in how you, the people you put there, the way that you make the scene, the framing, composition. I think with us especially, our shots and the way they're set up, the perspectives we do and the cameras, very related to this video game and map painting world. So they're always tilted, they're a bit slanted, they've got something that's like dynamic. They don't have as much the architectural vignettes, which is something you see a lot. And that kind of might be a style thing that we have. We're not so much about the architectural vignettes, we're more about telling a story in a map painting. So if you have a map painting, you have this house in top of this mountain, then you have this man right in the foreground, you're telling the relationship there, and then he's looking on the vastness of the plains. These are all things we translate into what we do and the way we represent our images.
Well, I think it's really interesting because you went to architecture school, right?
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
I went to architecture school as well, and what you do immediately when you're in architecture school is you actually learn how to tell a story, right?
Yeah.
Every day you have some professor that comes by your desk and is like, tell me what you got. And you have to narrate a story about your architecture.
Yeah.
And that story has to be sort of put out there in some way. Now, you can say it and you can have someone imagine what you're trying to talk about.
Yeah.
And you usually have a few sketches here and there. But a rendering is supposed to be the accumulation of that actual process and what it actually means. And I think that's the thing that's interesting to me is narrative and how narrative has an important role in the communication of design.
Yeah, it binds the viewer to the image, right? So.
Right.
That's another thing that I've started to understand, which is that narrative is really what makes, it's kind of, you have the medium and you have your intermedium, right? And you have the final object and you have the person that's apprehending it. And if you make that final object more humanized, familiar to, I mean, a lot of the stuff we do is not like pixel perfect. It's very loose, because that we find also creates this empathy with the viewer.
Okay.
So it's probably to be seen from a further away level, and that in itself also, it just breaks down that space between the viewer. So someone who's looking at this for the first time has to feel that empathy, and that's our target audience. We have to convince people with the narrative that the architect's put together through his architecture or his objects or whatever he's creating. So we have to break that down. And yeah, university, man, I used to hate those.
Yeah, but you learn how to talk, right? How to communicate those designs, because that's your number one job as an architect is to communicate what you're trying to say. Go ahead.
I used to have a teacher, he would say, if you only know your project when you can call someone over the phone and really tell him everything, tell him or her everything.
Without a single image, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's how you should be able to represent your project.
Right.
And that is the way to kind of communicate it through words.
Right.
At school, it was hard.
It was hard, but I think it's also an important skill because, you know, there's a lot of people here who are coming from directors or trying to make shorts, et cetera. In order to do that, they have to pitch the idea, right? The pitch is what an architecture presentation is. It's a pitch, right?
Yeah.
So, you mentioned quickly that you were looking at some VR and AR stuff as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
What are you doing in those areas?
Well, we're starting to look at actually facilitating things, so it's a lot quicker.
Mm-hmm.
At least we're starting to look especially at Unreal, but breaking down those barriers of making it quicker, this is one of the things that's also made it harder. So we want to kind of bring that into the concept art world of architecture. So okay. bring that in a little bit. So that's taking a little bit. I know architecture is quite advanced with the designing and the VR, and designing in VR, especially with Microsoft HoloLens, etc. But what we're looking at is, yeah, breaking that down, also integrating a little bit of the marketing aspect of that.
Okay.
So that we can do also things that are more premium, develop also storylines, how VR can communicate, so through apps or through direct input, because there's still some barriers there, we find, yeah. at least in what we've seen. And we want to see how we can take our storytelling through images to that third, fourth dimension in a quicker way than animating and in a more loose way. So that's really what we're trying to explore at the moment. And yeah, it's fascinating what's coming. Yeah.
I think that what I have found interesting is the fact that there's obviously VR is like such a natural fit for architecture,
yeah,
in other ways.
Exactly.
And there's a lot of companies out there, Arquis companies like yourself, that are already making money in VR. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the fact is that it's not like, I wonder what we're going to do with this VR thing.
Yeah.
With architecture, it's a slam dunk,
yeah.
right? It's
yeah.
in a lot of ways. But you are right, because you do try to tell a narrative through it. So what do you think the struggles are of actually trying to create a narrative inside of VR?
Well, the first, the technical aspects, you know, taking out all the technical aspects of bringing stuff in quick, getting it out quick, because
right.
this is a very vibrant, quick world.
Mm-hmm.
So nothing, no one, you can't say, I'm going to deliver that in a month. You want something that's really relatively quick.
Mm-hmm.
Another is also you put on your headset, right? And then you take it off, you give it to someone else. This whole thing also creates another technical aspect of
The fact that it's harder to get two people in the space.
Yeah.
But
there are options now for this. But it's immense, because you're basically covered by this virtual world, and you can interact with it. And what we're trying to really understand, and it's the difficulty of how we can interact with this in a level where it's quick, efficient. We can give it to the client in our style and our form,
mm-hmm.
so that they can give to clients, and it's more about actually it's not so much about understanding the detail of something, or
right.
you know, that this has a shadow gap or something like that, but it's apprehending the whole experience of being in a space, understanding that space, you can basically deconstruct the elements, you can try a different design very quickly, but all with the quality that you can have with the atmospherics and things like this. This is something we're still working on and really
right.
trying to understand.
Yeah, that is a challenge. I think obviously now we're looking at, there's other solutions that are involving pre-rendered content that you
yeah.
can do in VR, which is something that I'm interested in finding out how that helps. But do you think that really is something that, because of the way stills now have gotten, rendering engines, offline
yeah.
rendering engines, have gotten so good that they look, especially
yeah.
in architecture, they look completely real. Do you
yeah.
feel that the quality has taken a step back because you're no longer able to ray trace it directly, or do you feel it's just a little bit different and people are fine with that?
Quality is a step back in VR, you're
yeah.
saying?
Yeah, in terms of if you're going to real time.
Yeah. Well, I think it's like every technology that develops, right? I've seen amazing things in real time. The quality is really out there.
But doesn't it take a lot longer to get there?
That's the thing. I mean, we're not going to create an experience in a day, whereas we can create 2-3 images in a day if we need to represent something very, very that has a lot of feeling in it. So
right.
this is the thing. And time is money, unfortunately.
Right.
So, I think that it hasn't necessarily stepped back in quality. Maybe it's stepped back in how technical it is to get to that quality.
Because,
I mean, I've seen amazing things being done in both Unity and Unreal.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really the promising stuff that's coming, Datasmith, V-Ray for Unreal.
Right.
There are a lot of promising things that are going to speed it up and are going to make the quality as great as it could be. So,
right.
yeah, I mean, stills will always be stills, right? No one's...
Yeah, I don't think their stills are going away.
Yeah.
I mean, people still like stills in VR experiences
yeah.
or VR experience. I think they complement
yeah.
each other.
That's true.
But I think you're right. I think the idea of interacting in a space together or having
yeah.
a discussion
yeah.
is hard. There are people that are actually trying to create technology to review work in VR
yeah.
so that one person...
Yeah.
That's really kind of crazy.
How this is going to work is a tricky thing, because, architecture has been communicated. I don't want to be one of those old school people, but architecture has been communicated through drawing for so many years, you know, hundreds of years, and it's worked.
Right.
You know? Are we overcomplicating things for our own good? Or are we kind of developing things for a better good? I think it's the latter one. It's the second one.
Right.
But that technology, of course, it's going to go back and forth and in a loop until we understand it. I think like things like the HoloLens, and I've seen like what exists now, where people have a similar program to SketchUp and basically extruding volumes, seeing how this works on a pedestrian level, seeing it from an eye level, seeing how it communicates with everything. You're basically seeing everything at the same time without looking at, you know, a large scale map of the city and then understanding that and then looking at a section and kind of filling in the gaps with your experience, because a good architect will fill those gaps in. But with the tool where you see everything immediately, you've immediately got this thing where, wait a minute, I can just push this down, see it from a city level, bring it up, I can see how this works, I can probably run some simulations to see how the air flows through here, I can probably see structurally. So yeah, I mean, the potential is immense for what's coming, especially for architecture. And it's, now it's up to the architects to do an amazing job to use that.
Yeah, hopefully that's the goal. But I do find it surprising that architects don't realize how much of a leap forward they have made into understanding VR compared to the rest of the world. And they should be, people should come to the architects and say, let me learn from what the architects are doing. The other analogy I always use is, I say that like architects never realize that they kind of revolutionized global illumination before anyone else.
Right? Yeah. And so I remember from your talk.
And so I think that was an important part. And I was like, we did this. Like, the architects have done this for a long time, and they don't even realize how much they've taken technology and really sort of made it mainstream, you know? Because, you know, the VFX guys are like, no, we're the leaders of computer graphics. And I'm like, well, there's some stuff that's going on the side here that you may not be aware of. That's some people that you don't know that are using this stuff every day.
Yeah.
So I find it really fascinating. Let's see. We have about a minute and a half left here, but let's talk a little bit about where people can see some of your work and where they can go.
So our work is basically archi9.com. And
how do you spell archi9?
So that's A, Alpha, Romeo, Quebec, Unicorn, India, numerical 9.
There you go. Wow, good for you. Were you in the military?
I've had to do this because it's in England. People are like, archi9, aqua what? And it's like, okay, so I had this on the board, Alpha Romeo Quebec Unicorn India 9.com, and our YouTube channel, Archi9 Visualization, or Archi9 Learn, which is all the learning part of what we have.
Okay, awesome. And you do have some videos up there, some tutorials.
Yeah, there are a lot of tutorials on how we do it, matte painting in ArchViz, basically our process, a lot of information. There's one going up this Sunday as well, so
Oh, perfect. That would be great for people to have that as a resource.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
All right, well, this is great. Thanks so much for coming. I appreciate
it. It's a pleasure. It's really a pleasure, Chris. Thank you.